Go guy.
Hello, everybody. It's us. It's me. I'm Randy.
I'm here. It's me. It's Jared.
We're recording this more contemporarily than the episodes that, the episode you're about to listen to, because we recorded all that stuff way back earlier in the beginning of the year, and now it's close to Christmas, 2022. And you know what that is, Jared?
It's, I think there's an anniversary coming up here.
You were not going in the doghouse. You've remembered our anniversary. It is the 25th anniversary of the final episode of Revolutionary Girl Utena airing in Japan. So we just thought we would check in, say, hey, we're still alive and kicking, and talk about, you know, reflect on the year and, you know, what Utena stuff has been on our minds. Yeah. Jared, why don't you tell me what you've been thinking about since you were the Utena virgin, and now you know as much as I do.
I finally have my title for this whole podcast, the Utena virgin.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's been a year since we've finished watching this series, and then I feel like it's like the gap between when the series ended and when the movie starts, and I don't remember or know exactly how much time went by or whatever, if it was a sequel or or an alternate telling. But I will say this, I do feel like I'm Anthy who left and now I'm back, and we're here to keep life rolling and do a retelling. Is that what it is?
Pretty much.
Yeah, I will say this, what stood out to me over the last year and thinking about it, I do think that the later, from what I remember, the later story arcs were really strong. And then the film itself is a monumental achievement. And I just saw a clip the other day of, we didn't watch the show in English. We watched it in Japanese, right? I'm not familiar with the dub. And I saw the dub scene of the cars. Which is not a spoiler because we just covered the movie in the last episode.
Yep, that's right.
But the cars, and I don't know, I couldn't remember exactly who it cut to, but the girl, she was like, "Yeah, I'm a car too." And I'm like, that's hilarious.
Shiori, I believe, is
I'm glad we watched it in Japanese. But the dub, it was just so funny. Now I'm interested to see like more of it in English, just to know. But yeah, it stuck with me. It has definitely been impactful for some of the topics, some of the themes it did, and like just the fact that it was all hand drawn, right? There was some really amazing stuff. Like listening back to some of our podcast episodes too, there was just some amazing shots that just came out of nowhere. It was like always the same thing. Episodes were kind of similar, and then out of nowhere, like these really cool things would happen. And the film is just striking from like the very beginning with the bells and up through the crazy car scene, and there's a dance scene. There's so much, and then the ending is just it was really cool. So I've been thinking that one day I could do a rewatch of this. I think I'd want to do it with friends, but I would want them to really pay attention and like really enjoy it. So I don't know, but I think there's at least one person in my life who might be interested. But I mean, this was like your second time watching it. Is that right? With when we did this? So like, how do you feel? Like, does it feel more solid? Do you feel like more of an expert?
I do feel like more of an expert. And I will say, as a person who watched it their second time with a friend who could, you know, really pay attention and really absorb it, was such a great experience, Jared. It's some of my favorite memories of anime watching is sitting here, you know, over the internet watching a show with you and talking about it. And the show itself, man, yeah, seeing it a second time really solidifies a lot of the things that happen in the events, themes, music. Like, it's just all in all an incredible package. And, you know, listening to the episodes as we've been editing them, also sorry for it taking so long, squarely my fault because I'm a lazy piece of garbage, but you know, we're working on
that far. I mean,
Well,
I think what we should say is that life happens, and there's a lot that we do outside of the podcast. So we kind of like dedicated to like, okay, every 2 weeks we're going to do our best to get these out. Sorry for the small delay here, and we're now done. Like, this is it, the last episode.
Right. But it's been good. I'm not sure if I am ready to do another podcast like this. It's been a good experience, but I believe we had talked about it before, and it's been a year, and it hasn't happened. I still want to sit down, and I want to watch more Ikuhara anime with you. I'd like to do Penguin Drum, because I really don't remember a lot that happens in there. I just remember a few key things. Yuri Kuma Arashi, which is incredible. This past July, I finally watched Sarazanmai, his newest show, that it's 11 episodes. Holy crap, is really, really, really good. And I can't believe I slept on it for like the 2 years between it airing and like watching it. And I want to show that to you, but also like, oh, I kind of want to watch all the things before that too, or at least have you experienced them. I don't know. Like, his stuff is out there and wild and weird and so many what the fuck moments, but man, it's good. And, you know, it was a good experience overall, the show and, you know, watching the show.
Yeah, it's, the show was fun. The movie was wild. Some of the stuff that like eventually we had to cover got, you know, kind of heavy with what the show does. It goes from like super lighthearted to some pretty dark themes and subject matter and some interesting content over to the film. And like, there's just so much amazing like breakdown of content out there of like these other podcasts covering the show. There's like articles and YouTube videos, and some of them are newer, some of them are older, but like you can tell that the show sparks conversation with people and deep diving. So yeah, it was pretty wild. And doing the podcast is cool because you always have something, you know, kind of set in stone, the digital stone out there in the world for people to be able to experience later on if they wish. And we've had an audience along the way here, so that's been nice. And thank you everyone for listening and being patient with us, and we hope that you've enjoyed it.
Yeah, I echo the same thoughts. Thank you for sticking with us and listening. I know I've talked to some people that have picked up the show and listened to them, or you know, people have reached out to me and talked about the show. Like, I just listened to your episode. Can we talk about this moment? I'm like, yeah, absolutely. I want to talk about it. So it's been great. So again, thank you so much. And we've got this last episode coming up here for you that features us slightly younger, about just as handsome as we are now, I will say.
Pretty much, I think we look the same. And, it's funny that it was a year ago, right? I think it was about a year ago when we finished and watched and recorded. But it's interesting how much of it does stick with you. I think it definitely does. So you know, we hope that you enjoy our last overall episode. And I know we answered some questions in there, too. And that was fun that we got some questions in, and I was skimming through the episode just tonight, actually. And it was just nice to see we had some audience participation, which is cool. So if you've been waiting a year for your questions to be answered, it will happen very soon.
So have fun with it. I know that we usually would do any sort of plugs or whatever at the end, but I just wanted to say that if you enjoy the sultry tones of Jared and would like to hear more about traveling to Japan and learning about Japanese culture, since we recorded our last episode, Jared started another podcast called the Japan Longing Club Podcast.
Yeah.
So give that a listen. It's good stuff.
Yeah, we did it. You were there for 10 episodes of that. And then I'm on episode 21, just came out. So it's been really great. Each episode I'm covering a different prefecture in Japan with travel ideas you can do, looking over people's travel itineraries and reading stories from Camellia Kyoto in it's a tea house in Kyoto. And it gave us permission to be able to read them. And then Randy, you're doing your podcast. If you want to talk about that.
That's right. We got a podcast, Dragon Ball Podcast with me and my buddy Doug. We've reviewed all of the Dragon Ball movies. We're continuing talking about other stuff. We even watched the Taiwanese, I believe, early 90s live-action bootleg adaptation of Dragon Ball, which, spoiler alert, was incredible. It's called Dragon Ball The Magic Begins. Check it out. It's great. But yeah, we continue to do it. We try to do every 2 weeks, but the holidays have kind of messed with that. But yeah, you know, if you want to hear more anime jibber-jabber, check that out too.
And we're still on Twitter, right? Twitter's still a thing that still exists.
Currently, this week, at the end of December, it is still standing. You can find me there at Saber_Breaker. Otherwise, I've also moved on over to Hive Social. You can find me there at SaberBreaker, no underscore. Be friends with me there. I post stuff all the time. I'm trying to make it a thing.
Yeah, I'm still on Twitter for primarily now, like I would say, just like go to the Longing Club. So it's at Longing Club. That's where I post all my podcast stuff. And at, you know, the Hot Anime Vlogger, that still exists out there, a little less posting because of the other account. And on Instagram, I know I have a lot of people there. That's Hot Anime Vlogger as well. And I post the podcast announcements there too. And you get to see like little cute little things that I put together for each episode. So that's been fun. So if you can find us online, so yeah,
for sure do that.
This was fun, and I hope again everyone enjoys their this episode coming up. It is the holiday season now, and we're celebrating that Christmas Eve anniversary. We're gonna have this these episodes come out for everyone, and happy holidays to everyone out there.
Yeah, happy holidays. Enjoy your anime. Enjoy your friends and family. And we'll check you another time.
Vroom, vroom into the sunset, as they would say.
Vroom, vroom! Extra, extra, extra! Welcome to Revolutionary Podcast Utena, where one kind of expert and one total newbie watch Revolutionary Girl Utena and talk about it for your enjoyment. Yo, I'm Randy.
Go guy, go guy, go guy. I'm made of straw, and I'm Jared. What's up?
Hey, not too much. What's up with you? Anything new?
You know, just giving a shout out to the internet fam, the Utena fans who have made it all the way here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, not a whole lot going on. Anything new going on for you?
I'm trying to think of anything new and exciting. I've just been playing video games as much as I can, like Pokemon Legends Arceus, which is really, 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 really fun. And a nice, fun new twist on the same old Pokemon games we've had for 20 years.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I am I'm like 25 hours into that.
Mm-hmm.
If anyone has been listening through the episode, they can tell that every time when we start one of these, we always discuss what we're doing. And they're like, wait a second, when did this podcast start? And then it was Christmas, and now it was Spider-Man? And then it's Arceus, or Arceus.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, I'm playing that too. And today we had a Nintendo Direct.
Yes, you're really trying to narrow it down. Exactly what time did we record this?
And what time did we record this? But which Nintendo Director are we talking about?
Well.
But yeah, there was a lot of good stuff. You know, like a whole another year of video games.
So, right? Yeah. Made me want to sit down and talk about it with you again, like we did in the old days.
The old days. Now my question, are there any Nintendo video games?
I do not know.
I don't know either. Google. Utena video games.
Looks like there's a Saturn game.
Oh boy.
Story of the Someday something.
Yep, Monogatari something.
Yeah.
Is it
Story of the Someday Revolution?
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm getting recommended a strange link that I am not going to click. But it's good to
went
know
to
it
the
exists.
Source on YouTube.
Oh, nice, nice, nice.
Yeah. So
that's cool.
Maybe that's what we'll do. We'll come back in a couple of years and we'll play through or do a watch through of this Saturn game.
Oh, God. It'd be quite the thing. It'd be just like a visual novel or something.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just like blocks of text.
But, you know, we got to talk about what we're really here for, man. And we got to tell people what the premise of this podcast is. If for some reason this is your first one, sorry, it's over after this. The premise of this podcast was to watch Revolutionary Girl Utena together and talk about it. We've finished the TV show and the movie now, so we've done it all. If you have not seen the show and you're listening to this, I have a multitude of questions on your life choices. But if you wanted to catch up again, you can watch all the TV series for free on YouTube on Nozomi Entertainment's YouTube channel. It's also up on Funimation now and Crunchyroll, except for the movie. You can't really see that anywhere unless you buy the DVD or the Blu-ray from places like Right Stuff and Amazon. And also, you can get the TV series there, too. So I would recommend doing that. So, like I said, we watched it all. And the purpose of this episode is...
All of it.
All of it. Is the purpose of this one is a retrospective, a look back at everything that we've seen and we've done and we've talked about and we've felt and we've laughed and we've cried, and just to talk about it looking back on it. So let's just jump into it, man. So Utena, we watched the TV series first. What did you like about this TV series?
Well, I'm going to reference my notes.
You took extensive notes the whole time, which was super great.
I'm
going
to read through all of them, so I hope people want to listen to me for 20 minutes as I read through. There's at least like 2,000 words here, I think. I am kidding. Don't stop listening.
No.
Oh, man, the question of what did we like about the TV series? You know, TV series, that show stands out for what it was able to do with its budget and stretch things out over, I think, 39 episodes. Is that right?
Yes.
You know, that's, I mean, compared to a lot of newer stuff, I feel like that's a longer series. Like a lot of shows nowadays are like 12 or 13 episodes, unless it's lucky and they get like a second core or something like that. This show like did a lot. And, you know, one of my first notes in the first episode was something about like, oh, hey, there's the rose ring and there's water flowing and then the gates open, all this stuff happens, and then we go up to the tower and all this. And, you know, we talked a lot about this, but like the reuse of the animation, they effectively did that, because once like something was different, you're like, oh man, this is like an important moment, right? So I think that like one of my favorite things they did for this TV series was just being able to follow through with what they could and do a good job at it. And it doesn't really seem like they stumbled anywhere. I have my own personal opinions on some of the arcs, but overall, like, it was quite an accomplishment.
They had a vision and they stuck to it and they executed it, right? I mean,
right.
They were able to bring it to completion without any huge, you know, troubles. Other than early on, I believe we had an episode that aired out of order because of production issues. But that's not the worst. Certainly, there's been other, you know, bad stumbling blocks that have happened during an anime's production.
Yeah.
So, all in all, not too bad.
Yeah. The characters are fairly strong. Like, I think that the writing for them is pretty decent. Even though I had some criticism that like as we went through the arcs, some of like the moments with like the development between some of the characters was kind of cyclical, and it's like, oh yeah, we can expect this to happen again, or like these confrontations to develop further because it's just gonna happen, and then the duels will all happen again. I think that like going through up until like the third and the fourth arc, they did a pretty good job of like just overall giving like a capstone to most of the characters, and really formulating a solid cast. Like, not too many people got left behind. I mean, I think a few did.
Right.
But it's kind of hard because like in the movie, things were handled a little differently. But I think that like most of them had, you know, a decent start and then a pretty much decent ending.
So. Oh yeah, absolutely. There's something that I thought that you would have brought up right away, and I'm surprised that it wasn't at the top of your list of things you liked on the TV series, because I feel like you really connect with some things music. Mm-hmm. And I know that you were listening to a lot of it after we finished the TV series and things, and you were pretty impressed with the variety and the complexity and the scale of all of the pieces that were made for this TV series. Because, I mean, you said you didn't hear a lot of it while we were watching it, but listening back to it in isolation, it was something that you enjoyed.
There were certain things that that like just didn't stand out to me while we watched. There was eye catch moments. I mean, I guess that's kind of like an anime cell term where it's like, oh, it's the little jingle that plays halfway through each episode. That kind of stuff, became pretty commonplace. And then obviously like that, like Zetai End of the World Apocalypse song,
right.
Absolute Destiny Apocalypse. all of those, it was pretty powerful. But then I noticed after watching the series, I was just listening through a bunch of the music, and I was just like kind of blown away how strong the production quality was. And then I kind of tied that back to the series and being like, wow, they really did do a good job. Like they carried certain, certain structures of songs. And I guess that's like a motif, through, and they built upon them pretty well. And I was just kind of blown away by the production quality. So there was something about that, that had definitely stood out to me.
Oh, heck yeah. I mean, there's a lot of different pieces in there. So even if something doesn't jive with you, like the latter half of the song when Akio's car is summoned, you dig the first part, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that song itself, to me, kind of felt like it became a little generic after the awesome opening. So like for the first 30 seconds to a minute, it's great. And then it's just like its own thing.
Yeah.
But then like we learned that for Absolute Destiny Apocalypse, there's like a... What is it, like a... Not like
an industrial version. Mix.
Industrial mix. That was so funny.
That one, I think, is probably one of my favorite versions of that song, because there are, you know, multiples. But,
That theme, one of the main themes that I really shouldn't try to hum, or should I?
Yep.
That music, I noticed while listening to it that it is, you know what to expect in that song, and then there's like a certain part of the song that completely satisfies what it's trying to do, and you're like, oh my god, yeah, that was a cool song. Definitely worth listening to. Give it a shot, like just on its own. I think even some of the easily accessible uploads that are out there were pretty decent quality, and I think it really is like a test to the original recordings. So
absolutely. So these are some things that we liked about it, but I, of course, no piece of media is perfect, and we can enjoy something but still critique it. What is something that we didn't get out of the TV series that we wanted, or we felt that the TV series was found wanting? Mm-hmm. So I've seen this before, and it's more I want to explore your thoughts and feelings since we're sort of fresh out of it.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you too. Like, I know, like, we've had a lot of perspective in the podcast recordings that is like a, you know, one newbie and one sort of newbie, or, you know, you've seen it before. I want to make sure you definitely get what you want to say too about what you liked about the series. I know we went over a lot of it, but I definitely want to hear your strongest thoughts too. Like, what do you like about the series the most, and like what kind of stands out to you?
So I really dig Ikuhara's storytelling techniques. I was somebody who grew up on Sailor Moon, and he kind of headed the first three seasons of that series. So there are some hallmarks of his storytelling in here. Of course, talked about the bank animation, you know, the ascending the stairs that's reused over and over again, that, you know, one, fills time, and two, looks impressive, so that since we're going to be seeing it a lot, we might as well spend some time in it. And three, helps set up an expectation of how things are going to go. And like you brought up, if it's different, we're snapped into attention, like, oh, this is different and something is sure to be happening and important. It's those types of things that I like. I really enjoyed pretty much most of the characters in this series. Certainly there were some that I loved and a good number of them that I loved to hate.
Yeah.
Kozue and Shiori.
Yeah.
Yep. Come to mind. But Akio, you know,
is, I can see as a famously despised villain.
But it's so well done that I'm just like,
yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I really enjoy most of the characters throughout the whole thing. It's Utena is, I don't know, sometimes the main character is the less or least exciting one, because like, all right, there's supposed to be kind of like an audience insert and all this stuff, so they can't really be too wild. But like, I felt that she was pretty good because she's got plenty of flaws. I mean, obviously she's very headstrong, but she can be more hot-headed and just kind of react to things rather than thinking it through. She is easily distracted, and she's always off in her own world, which leads to her missing certain things and important information. Doesn't bother to question the things around her, which it's like, girl, if you just ask some questions, this wouldn't be such a big deal. We could move on.
Yep. Yeah, and I'll tie that into one of the things that I kind of wanted more out of the show was I always thought that from the first episode that Utena was a little aloof to events, and she was so easy to forget and move on that big moments of going up those stairs and doing duels and people slapping each other, just strange concepts flying around from like the first episode of The Rose Bride and all of this. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, are you really like just gonna, you know, pass on those big moments and just gently slide through like over half of the series on that? And then like, finally, as like over halfway through, it's like we finally get into these moments where they develop her more.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say this the wrong way, but I feel like, I mean, there was obviously development for her throughout the show, but if you were to ask me where I think they brought it back to like where it was in the beginning to like continue on, was like when Akio saved her from that teacher who was like berating her for wearing male clothing again in the hallway. That happens much later in the show. And I'm like, huh. And then it's like we're back to where we were on episode one. Like, oh man, there's Utena and she's wearing you know, male uniform clothing. Oh, that's a big deal. And then you have all of these episodes of the duels and Anthy and trying to protect her. And it's just like it kind of repeats itself twice with the arcs with building certain other characters, but then finally going into the third arc, Utena gets built more.
Right.
And that was just like, that is one of my criticisms overall, because I was kind of mentioned this before in some of our most recent recordings that I had wished that Utena was looked into more from the beginning, and that there were hints along the way that were made or teased in a certain way of like of Akio, or more importance behind Anthy's reveal that kind of would have satisfied like this this more, I guess it's more of like a newer age type of tease where like little bits of information are shown to you that really want to keep you going. And this show, it is pretty good on its own. Like there's no denying that. But Utena's like receptiveness to like a lot of these events over the first two arcs just like made me feel like she just didn't really care at what was going on. I'm not really sure if that's too valid. I mean, I don't remember all of the things that had happened. I know she definitely didn't like it when Anthy was getting slapped or when strange things were happening to some of the characters. Like she seemed to like care a bit, but it just, I don't know. Like I wish there was something else that had tied it together more in the beginning, but I think if I were to ever do a rewatch, I think, like, as you had mentioned, I would probably just look at Anthy a lot more going through. But
you say that you're not sure it's valid. Obviously, Jared, it's valid. It's what your thoughts and feelings are on it. But I would say that I agree. I feel like a lot of the first two arcs are kind of really working towards establishing the student council characters more so. Like, I feel like they have more of a focus on exploration of character development and their backstory than Utena gets. I mean, obviously we want to save some big things for the end, but I think that a lot of that should be Anthy and not so much Utena. She does have some moments, specifically thinking of the last two episodes of the first arc, where she finally challenges Toga and she's torn because she thinks that he's her prince, and we learn like their history when she was younger, that she used to be very reclusive, but now she's more outgoing because she's, you know, desires to emulate this prince that she met. And then of course he steals Anthy away, and she was like, well, I liked Anthy, but now it's, you know, not having her around, and just kind of that shattering of her own self-confidence and her ideals of self, where she, now she's wearing a girl's uniform and she's, you know, not, you know, loud and brash and all of this stuff, before eventually like Wakaba snapping her out of it and, you know, telling her to live her life the way that she wants to, and to get what, you know, makes her happy, so that she's gonna, she goes and saves Anthy again and all of this. There's moments of it, but I agree that I think like there should have been more times exploring her, and maybe it would have been good to have some downtime where she's alone and we can see like what's making her tick, because most of the time she's just talking with other people and talking about their problems. We don't really get to hear like her feelings specifically about like life and everything else. Is kind of always in reaction to something rather than internal.
Was there anything else that you can, like, for like your perspective of something that the series had left you wanting more of, or maybe something you were disappointed in that sticks out to you?
Yeah, I feel like, you know, it just might be my expectations even going back and seeing it again. I feel like that we didn't get enough character development or resolution for some characters, which is fine because of where the series ends. The whole point is like they're not mature enough or have handled their issues enough where they can graduate from this place. But I would have liked to see some more development from Mickey and kind of, you know, pulling more away from Kozue and all of those issues, because I felt like his introduction was very strong, and then in the Black Rose arc it just seemed to do it again without a lot of new changes or facets to it.
It was really too bad that Mickey didn't get more. One of my first predictions ever that I had was that Mickey was going to disrupt the student council. And I got that vibe because it just seemed like he wanted to be friends with Utena and Anthy. And I was like, cool, we're going to have this character pretty early on move away from the student council and join this other crew. And then that would help to disrupt whatever's going on, at least in the first arc. Like, I had no clue how long the student council would actually be important for. But I thought I had this expectation, and then it never lived up to it. It never happened.
Yeah, I'm glad that I'm not the only one there. And maybe if I sit down and rewatch it again, or if somebody yells at me and tells me, well, here's X, Y reasons why this happened, and I can see a different perspective, I could be persuaded from that. I feel like Jury got a lot, which was very, very good. I always enjoyed any Jury episode I got.
Yeah.
Restarting the watch, I was like, oh, right, Nanami. Oh, that's right. And then seeing it again and like knowing that her episodes are kind of more goofy and not so much character development or plot related, I had the expectation like that's okay, and started to love them. And now Nanami is definitely in like my top five characters, because I loved the goofiness, I loved the humor, but I also loved her, you know, her actual internal suffering when she's not just like a gag or like the mean girl in school. Like, I don't know, there's a lot to Nanami, and I really enjoy that. So I got that out of that.
I think in the end, Nanami did have more going on than a lot of her filler episodes let on. That being said, when I looked through all my notes before we started recording, I completely forgot about one of the filler episodes, like the Onion Prince or something.
Oh, right. The first
Suwabuki?
Suwabuki, there we go. Got him?
Yep. I completely forgot about that. And the there's just like...
Oh, no, wasn't the Onion Prince was Wakaba's, like, friend.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
Okay. Yeah, well, whatever that Onion Prince thing is, I completely forgot about. There was something else from Nanami, though. Yeah, I can't quite remember. I know that we had, whenever I found my notes about Nanami when I was scrolling through, I was like, oh yeah, that's right. But yes, you're right. The Onion Prince thing, that makes sense. Yes. Okay.
Yes.
Man,
Itadakimasu.
Yeah,
Itadakimasu. That scene is definitely something Calvary up there.
And myrrh. Her egg thing. I took no notes on that episode. I just said Nanami's egg.
You lay thing. Eggs? What are you, a space alien? And like everybody like finding their whole thing. You know, it's a lot of metaphors for different things and female adolescence, but she, that's fine.
I think in the end they handled her decently well. I think her feelings for her brother were by the time that like that those that chapter for Nanami was coming to an end, it really was a lot more serious within the anime at that point. Mm-hmm. And the tone of the show had shifted a lot darker, and it kind of fit well with Nanami's ending. And I can say that I with that badminton scene in that badminton episode, I think that she likely did graduate out to some level. If that's what you think happens in the world of Utena, that they can graduate out, or if they're ready to leave, maybe that's what happened there. One thing I want to say that I will go back to, and we've talked about this a couple of times, is my feelings about the second arc. And one of the things I will say after reading the notes again and just talking with you tonight is that I think the second arc is necessary. I think that the extra duels were important for further development of the characters that we had, the student council and some of the relationships and stuff. Yeah. What I don't think was great about the second arc is that while the Black Rose arc is like in the Black Rose Club, the elevator of emotions, it was the Mikage seminar. Is that what they call it?
Yes, exactly.
While all of that was interesting, I think that's what it has going for it, is that it was interesting and the overall story was kind of different. But I just wish that the second, like the overall plot and Akio's manipulation and Anthy's manipulation of what that was, I wish it was more than just showing you what they are capable of as villains or antagonists. I wish it was more than that, and I wish there was some further impact than the one of the last episodes of that arc. Because the last episode is like a Suwabaki thing with his diary, I think. But the episode before that was, I think, the ending of the seminar thing, and I believe that it's just, you know, Miki and Utena or someone walking around being like, there was a school here, I think. I think it burned down, maybe. I think this I don't really know. I don't remember anything. And then they just keep going. And it's kind of a mystery almost of what had really happened to some of the characters. And you helped me understand that, oh, the kid was probably dead. And the actual dude, is it Soji? No.
Yeah, Soji Mikage or Soji. Professor Nemuro in 50 years ago.
That Soji was, you know, just done for. He was done with. Like, I feel like that the results of that second arc, I wish had carried on further into the series, because the first arc does a really good job, obviously, of making an established tone, introducing the student council members, the relationships of the characters, all of their quirks. And then the second arc takes that and pushes it in an interesting way. But I just don't think it really fully hits with like the two-parter episode near the end with the big reveals of Nemuro and everything. It just didn't hit the way that I think it should have. And then you have a strong shift into the third arc, and everything gets pretty serious, and it's more about Utena and Anthy and Akio and all of that. It didn't make sense to me why they would have done that beyond just maybe extending the series a bit. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what your thoughts are.
And like deepening the mystery of like things are really weird at this school, and that people stay the age they are while they're there, and like it's been going on for a long time, and there's been multiple rounds of duelists. Either they are actually dueling or they're scientists, like, looking into what eternity is. And there's a lot in there that, like, ties into the themes and overall stuff. But I think it would have helped if there was something that Nemuro had done or some interaction that he or anybody else in the Black Rose arc introduced there had a lasting effect on something that would have pushed that forward for the main characters. I think that would have been a really big help. It's definitely a good, like, thing to, like, give the series some more identity after that first arc and really, like, try to keep you in on, like, what is going on here. It's a mystery sort of thing. But yeah, I don't think it's very fun in the moment, but looking back on it after watching the show both times, I don't think it has as big of an impact in the overall series. Definitely you need to watch it, but yeah, it lacks some of that punch.
I look back at the overall show and I appreciate that it happened and I appreciate what it showed. And it also kind of revealed more about Akio and Anthy and their ability for manipulating time or illusion, that those kind of things just came through pretty clearly. To some level, I had a lot of question marks in some of my notes, but I was like, wait, did that happen? Did this happen? Whoa, what happened to this? But yeah, I do wish that maybe something had been passed down from Nemuro, Mr. Mikage Seminar guy. I wish something had been passed down, and I guess some of that made it into the film. But anyways, I don't have too much to complain about, I guess, but definitely some interesting views on the storytelling itself when it came to that second arc. And then in addition to that, like, Utena's really, like, seriousness developing more into, like, the third arc, I felt like, where I wish we had a bit more of that throughout.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'm right there with you. We had the movie, which we just spoke about in the previous episode, and we spent the whole time on that, but I do want to talk about it in relation to itself and the TV series. Jared, what did you like about the movie? I know we had an entire episode where we talked about what you liked about it, but the highlights.
Highlights would be that they took this 39-episode series and did an excellent job at making this some kind of sequel, some type of retelling, and some kind of continuation, like, mix that was such a great blend of everything that you had seen in the series. Familiar sets at times, backgrounds were familiar, the essence of, like, what was happening in the moment, some plot line stuff was similar, and then some of it radically different. A really great blend of, like, homage to itself, which is weird because this is just, like, you know, kind of like a continuation from just 2 years before that. I can't remember, Randy, what we said about maybe some of the commentary or what's known about this film, where I can't remember if Ikuhara had said something like he was trying to fit things in this film that they wanted to do in the show, or they tried to do things in the movie that they couldn't do in the show.
Right.
And it's like, I just feel like it's maybe the true telling of the Utena story. Keeping in mind that if Anthy is aware of everything, that it's a really powerful move for the show to have Anthy continue her, her independence after the ending of the series. So that's kind of like, it's a lot. The movie is gorgeous. It's animated well. Yeah. Music still stands out. But the moments themselves are so intricate, and I think it does a better job than the criticism I had of Utena's development in the series versus in the film. Because if the film played it similar to the series and she had, like, not a whole lot of development or certain things were taken as seriously for half the movie, it would have been pretty horrible. I'm not horrible, but it would have been like, oh yeah, you're really sticking to, like, the outline of the show, huh? But, like, no, like, the opening shot of Utena is, you know, you see her and she's got short hair and, like, everything's just so spectacular. Like, wow. It's just handled so well that It's probably one of the better or best anime films ever. It's really strong.
That's so nice to hear. What a great compliment. But I think you're right. I think that is something that the movie stands out for, is the fact that the TV series, like, I felt focuses a lot on the student council and the mystery of everything, at the expense of Utena not really picking up on this mystery and, like, doing any investigating or anything and just, like, letting it happen. And kind of stretching that pretty thin, whereas this movie, they're sort of tertiary characters, and it is really all about Utena and Anthy and, you know, that whole development. So what happens in it is much more condensed, and it feels like it moves a lot quicker from her introduction of, like, not knowing what's going on to being wrapped up into things. And she's a lot less aloof at what's happening. It's much more of, like, significant to her and her reactions to things. So I think it does a much better job handling her character than the TV series did.
I think, though, if I think about one thing about the TV series, Utena, and then the film, is Utena was, like, purely taken advantage of by Akio later on. Mm-hmm. And I think that could be seen as a moment of her character. I'm trying to think of, like, the best way to say this, that it follows along that she was fairly innocent mm-hmm. throughout a lot of the show. And then when things develop with Akio and, you know, he sleeps with her and takes advantage of her and also manipulates her emotions, which ultimately challenges her in the end of the series and if she should be still have the right to be a prince and or not, and et cetera. I think that, I guess I'm making an argument for one of the things that I didn't care for was that she wasn't really developed well throughout the show. But, like, when they really ramp it up, they do it in such a way where maybe that piece of her makes sense, that innocence is gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it maybe did it. I don't mean to backtrack here, but if it did it that well, that episode where they went to the carnival and yeah. then they're in the room, and then, like, I didn't realize what was going on until she's in bed and staring at Akio. I didn't realize what had been happening up until that point. That if it fooled me, you know, it's like maybe that's kind of also what the series had intended all along. So maybe it was kind of done on purpose to some degree. I do think that the film overall handled her better, as you had just said. But when I'm really starting to think back on this, I just wonder if it was intentional or if they really just wanted to build out the rest of the cast more. Whereas in the film, as we know, it is more of an Anthy Utena story than anything else. So,
yeah, I mean, it's fun. I think that's what's nice about this conversation of looking back on it, is we're reflecting on things and thinking, you know, challenging our previous thoughts with, you know, other information that we're coming across and discovering. So it's nice to think back on it. I also was thinking back right now on TV Utena versus movie Utena, and, you know, being aloof and just kind of, like, not taking things serious and then being manipulated into all these things. Thinking about in media what a lot of movies and things do when they're like, this is a strong female character, and that, like, oh, she's tough and she doesn't take any shit and she's gonna beat you up and that's it, and no vulnerability, she's strong. But, like, Tana is a bit more complex than that, because, you know, we have to remember she's, you know, a teenager, she's dealing with a whole bunch of, like, new emotions and, like, the complexities and things of, like, being on that threshold between childhood and adulthood, and that she can be, you know, not perfect, and she makes a lot of mistakes, and she, you know, her worldview is kind of small because of the not a lot of experiences that she's had. And then despite all that, she does, like, make it through, and she is vulnerable. She'll cry. She'll have moments of, you know, being hot-headed in a time when, like, maybe she should be thinking things through. And, like, yeah, I suppose for an entertainment purposes that it going slow is kind of annoying because we're not seeing a progression, but I think it's a pretty good means of exploring a character at that age and with these sort of circumstances. But that's not to say that Movie Utena is worse because of that, because there's, you know, a lot of things that she's going through, and she has, again, some complexity, and she's not perfect, and she's trying her best. And, you know, thankfully, like, the way that the movie goes, she does find her path pretty quickly, which is good. I don't know. I'm just kind of talking through my own thoughts, thinking back on this. I'm not sure what you feel about that.
I think this is, like, one of, like, that kind of ultimate things that I think a lot of Utena fans have probably done over time, is thinking back and thinking of the Utena that existed in the series versus the film, and really deciphering the differences and the similarities and trying to figure out, is this the same Utena or not? But yeah, it's fun to do this, though, like, and you know, try to figure out our own feelings for it, but I know we could go on forever.
That's true.
What is there anything that we did not really get from the movie that we wanted? Was there anything that let us down on, or any mysteries it didn't answer? Or
I think that's the fun part about the series and then the movie in particular, that there are mysteries that we don't see the resolution to or aren't entirely spoon-fed to us. So it's fun to sit and, like, theorize and go back and comb through it again and come up with new info. I mean, we were talking about some Evangelion stuff before we started recording about this. We're like, oh, I didn't notice that. Well, that puts this in a different context. Mm-hmm. And you could do a lot of that with Utena. I think that something in the movie that I would have liked, I would have liked it to have been longer so that I could have more time and exploring the student council. Specifically, like, if you go into this movie not having seen the TV show, it's very odd for Sionji to be this chauvinistic asshole who is introduced and slaps Anthy and then gets defeated. And then the next time we see him, he's in the friendship wagon and like, yeah, we're on your side. Like, what? Like, that guy, why is he here? But if you've seen the TV series, obviously, it's like, okay, well, he had his development.
If you see that moment back in the day and, like, you see him in the vehicle, the walk of a car, you probably know, I'm going to make an assumption that you probably know this is the film from a series, and that you probably have some guess that, oh, yeah, that must make sense somehow.
Yeah.
You know, it's like one of those weird anime things.
Yeah, you make those connections of like, oh, okay, this is a thing that obviously I don't get and I'm missing out on information, but I can see where they might have gone with this.
Yes, yeah.
Still, it would have been nice to have that in the film. I know that, you know, it might have been tough to, like, keep the pacing that you wanted to do and tell the story you did without, like, going off and doing a whole bunch of side stuff, but, like, that would have been nice to have some more Sionji stuff to go over that. Everybody else, I think, it did well enough, but
I think that I agree mostly, except for the fact that, like, Sionji's major, like, second character was Toga. And
right. Toga, and he doesn't have that in this movie.
No, he doesn't have it at all. And if it goes that route, maybe it even makes more sense, like, with the weird character development, that you have to insert what you know about him from the series.
Right.
And if you don't have that background, then You don't just miss out on that. You miss out on, like, the entire movie. It's interesting. If I were to think of something that more from what the movie gave us, I wish that, if anything, it had connected the ending of the series more to the film, with understanding what had happened with those million swords that had apparently hit Utena, even though I still can't remember that happening, which is silly, but I know it did. And then, like, Anthy's coffin and the fact that Utena was sent away, she was gone and people sort of remembered her, but she was fading from their memories but had not died. And that Anthy takes off those glasses and leaves and has her independence. And I don't really quite remember Akio's reaction, but it seemed kind of typical. And that she leaves, and I'm like, cool, that's interesting. What an interesting ending for this 39-episode show, where then the film starts, and you have those immediate questions of, like, okay, sequel or retelling. And I just wish that maybe it had connected some of that, just a bit more beyond, like, mm-hmm. oh, she's not wearing her glasses. Okay. Or, right. like, there's a couple of things. But that's not really a huge complaint to me. I like I said before a few times, this movie is so great in how it handles its retelling / sequel power that it doesn't, I don't even know if it fully matters that if it's like a sequel or not. it's great content to think about. It's great. Like it's great to discuss it and I guess it's been discussed a lot in the fandom for years, but I'm at the end of it. I just like appreciate it as a whole kind of, it's a little cheesy to say, but
I think the movie, you have to really get nitpicky if you want to be like, well, it didn't deliver on this. 'Cause overall it is fantastic, and it's a turn of how I felt the first time I watched it, because I went in with zero context, and my husband was like, no, it's just a retelling, so I didn't even bother trying to connect it to what happened at the end of the TV series. So I just went in with like, oh, okay, it's a retelling, it's a different thing, okay, that's weird anyway. And now I have much more appreciation for it, one, because I had expectations, and two, like, I don't know, looking at it through a different lens, and, you know, it's a fantastic film.
You know, I'm just going to tie this into your other podcast real quick. Sure. We Got a Pod for Dragon Ball. You know, something I'll never forget, I still tell people the story to this day, and I guess whoever's listening out there could hear it again. I'll never forget seeing Dragon Ball Super Broly, the film, in theaters.
And, oh, yeah.
There was a couple behind me. There was this guy explaining to, I'm assuming girlfriend, who basically that movie starts off with like things in the past, and then it quickly gives like this quick montage of things that happened with Goku and maybe Vegeta, like, and all of the villains really quickly up to present day. And I'll never forget just sitting there and listening to the guy explain to, again, I believe it's their date, I'm assuming, that, like, they're like, oh, yeah. And I overheard just enough. Like, they said something like, Goku's got this tail. And as soon as they show on the screen becoming an ape, the person stopped talking and just completely gave up on trying to explain Dragon Ball, because it did it in, like, 15 seconds, right?
Yeah, yep.
But what I'm getting at here is there's the context of knowing the series that you're watching. And you know what? This is going to go for obviously any film out there that comes after a show. But like, you're going to appreciate that opening scene with like Frieza and Vegeta's dad and like the Saiyans and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've seen the show and you've seen a lot of elements there. Whereas if you take your date to this Dragon Ball Super film, or let's just imagine that Utena comes to theaters, which I would totally go to.
Oh, yeah, same.
If I took my wife to the Utena film without watching the show, and ooh. I sat there, and I'm like, okay, you see those bells? Do you see those bells? And they're ringing. Those are like battle bells. They're like victory bells. But there's like a battle that's going to happen. But there's something serious happening. You see that guy in the window? You see him, but now he's gone. That's like her brother, but he's like the prince. And then you just have to give up. Like,
yeah,
it's like you have to watch the series, right? Man. Okay, well, that was a tangent, but it was fun.
No, I get it. You know, it's the movie is pretty good. But I think you definitely do yourself a disservice from not experiencing what comes before it to really fill in those gaps.
Man.
I have some fun things for you after talking about the TV series and the movie. I am part of a very, very fun Discord group that is normally called, I believe it's Empty Movement, the Utena Discord group. But they keep changing the name because they're funny like that. Currently it is called Utena is Good, but Labor Revolution is Better. They're very much pro unionization, and like there's a separate channel in there that is called, Leftist Book Club. It's great. They're a very fun community. But last month, think either before or after we watched the movie, I'd put out a thing of like, hey, I'm doing this podcast. We're doing a retrospective look back at the whole series. And this is his first time watching it. Do you have questions for a new viewer and to hear what they have to say? So I've collected a few of them here, and I would love to hear what you have to say to these. Our first question comes from Mint, with an exclamation point at the end. So you got to have some energy in there. What is something you still don't understand? Now, that doesn't mean I'm going to answer or that I understand, but, you know, throw something out there that after watching this, what's something that still lingers like, well, what was that? What's the deal with that?
The entire series. You know, I read a lot of these questions ahead of time thinking I had answers, and then I'm in the moment. Something that I still don't understand would be one thing I will think of is it kind of connects the beginning and the end. So the beginning where Utena is looking for this school, and I believe it was the rose signet thing or whatever from her ring that brought her there. Obviously, we understand later on that it was Akio's doing, but like, I had the impression through a lot of the show that she had like traveled a lot or was from somewhere far away and then found the school and went there. The beginning of the film had something kind of similar where she just appeared. She's like, I'm here. I'm drawn here for some reason versus the outside world. So something that I still don't understand is like, was it always an illusion for her, or did the outside world actually exist to some degree? Because that whole moment with obviously her becoming a car and her and Anthy escaping, and then the outside world looks like it's an apocalypse. Did she ever like traverse that area before? Or when she was in the hospital at the end of the series, was she literally just close by, or was she far away? Like, I just always kind of curious on that. Like, what is the true setting of this show, and how does it differ from the rest of the world? Like, did the world go to shit when like the prince died or was frozen or whatever by Anthy, and then so much time went by that the rest of the world just like rotted because the prince wasn't there? Or like, did the world go on to some degree, or does it differ between the series and the film? That's something I still don't understand. I don't know. What about you?
Oh, no, I didn't want you to ask me, because now I can't think of anything. I didn't even think about anything coming into this.
You know, if it's just for me, I'll keep going, Randy, but if there's something
honestly, that is such a good one for you, because I also agree, because since we watched it, and then we had the reveal of Anthy and her past through the shadow players and also the dream sequence depicting like what happened, I was firmly in the camp of, oh, it's a shit show outside here because like monsters and like all these things that happened like had overrun the world and the prince is no longer there to save anybody. And then we have that shot outside when she turns into a car, and it just looks like a wasteland. But it's like, is that just immediately outside because these are other cars that tried to escape, but, you know, didn't make it. And this is just kind of like the junkyard.
Well, that's a good point.
Things are fine outside. It's something that I don't have a solid understanding of. And I would like to know more info on that. But also, I kind of like that it's kind of like, well, what is the deal here? How much of the Shadow Player story was true? Because it seems like it's just like that. And Anthy was a witch the whole time and wanted to curse the prince.
If they had shown Utena and Anthy on that motorcycle and they get past all of those broken down cars and everything that couldn't make it out, and they get just past them and like the sun comes out or something, that would have told you that, oh, they made it. But because it was so bleak, it really kind of made it seem like being at the school was a haven. And that in the series, yes, it was that crazy, like, what was it, like the thing that they used to look at the sky with, like it was just like a massive illusion device. Like,
yeah,
everything was an illusion. And then the series, I'm sorry, the film paints it that way too, with like the straw dolls at the end. And mm-hmm. like, it looked like things in the school were all decrepit. Like, it's like, okay, it's still
what's real, what's fake?
Yeah, it still begs that question of like, okay, were even the main student council characters real, or were they fake? Were they like ghosts? Like, what happened? And is Anthy truly dead but still alive? You know, I don't know. It's anime, so it's easy to just suspend disbelief. But
right, anyways, just accept it and be like, okay,
yeah.
This next one is pretty important, and I expect a very serious answer. This question was by T-Sot, who asks, did you know it was a mistake to think that you were the only one who can turn into a car?
I thought, you know, after growing up on a little bit of Transformers and some Beast Wars, that I could just turn into anything I wanted. But yeah, I was effectively blown away by the fact that she turned into a car. I am so happy that that wasn't spoiled for me, even though
I was so worried.
Even though after seeing it, I'm pretty sure I had heard about it in the past, but I had no clue it was this.
Yeah.
I feel like somehow, somewhere, I had heard or seen something of like something, a girl turning into a car. I have no clue. No, there's probably more than one anime where that happens. So,
right.
I mean, if today's Nintendo Direct can say anything, Kirby can turn into a car. So, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
So, this one is a big question.
Sure.
This is by Jeremy Number Two, who simply asks, who is your favorite character?
My first answer that I want to use to throw you off is Nanami.
Because I knew that she grew on you, but I didn't think that you were full on like, yeah, Nanami.
No, I'm not. She grew on me. She definitely moved up a few places, but she's not my favorite character. I do appreciate her a lot more in the end. I think there were a number of episodes where they were kind of wasted, especially with Suwabaki. But I think overall, those did play to her, and it was a strength that she was the first person to witness Akio and Anthy and the things that they were doing, and how much it affected her. Then the twists with her and Toga, and then finally that she had basically kind of graduated out. It was really interesting. I think they did a pretty good job.
Yeah.
Beyond that, I think that movie version Anthy is really strong mm-hmm. as a favorite character. I think Utena as a main character I like, but is not my favorite. And if I had to think of like another character that always stood out to me in her episodes, it would be Juri. Juri's episodes were really strong, and that's how I would go. I mean, who do you think your favorite character is?
So we share some taste here. I will say that Nanami is definitely up there for me. Juri, also excellent. I don't discriminate for Anthy, and I will say that Anthy is also such a marvelous character, and like so many different facets, and like it's just a really interesting, like the way that they had, you know, showed her and like showed you these things, and then going back and seeing it a second time of like, oh, okay, I really understand what they're doing with this character now. I think I would be remiss if I didn't mention Choo Choo.
I was going to say, where's your Choo Choo love? Yeah.
He's near and dear to my heart. On the Discord that I had mentioned before, you basically can choose like the chosen person that you want to represent here on the Discord, and you always have like a little photo of them next to your posts, and mine is Choo Choo, so let that mm-hmm. be known.
Mm.
Otherwise, I can't explain it, but I do have an affinity for Sionji, even though he's very problematic, very, very problematic. But like, I don't know, he has his own issues. And, you know, at that age, when you're that young, like there's hope for you to grow up and change your ways. So there are moments of him being vulnerable and like changing, like when he's staying with Wakaba, like that really does something for me. And I just like, I'm in his corner of like, dude, you fucked up on a lot of things and you got a lot of problems, but I feel like you can do it and I want to see you succeed. So yeah, I would say we're pretty much on the same page for everything, except for throw in Sionji in there.
Yeah, and you know, really, really putting a lot of extra thought into this while you were just talking. I think my favorite character is Kanai's mom, because she just fucks. So if we're if we're breaking our swear barrier,
ooh,
Kanai's
boy.
Mother. No, oh my god. I was actually thinking of like, who's the most forgettable character? Who's my least favorite character? But I was like, who's the most forgettable? Well, there was that one dude who was part of Juri's past, shows Ruka. Up. Ruka. He's forgettable. Who's that other? Who's the Onion Prince thing? Forgettable. I don't know. I just think it's funny how this show works. But I'm looking at this this next question, and I think I know how to answer.
So Florence Wilder asks, I assume this question is for if we, the second we've turned off the show and we finished, how gay do you feel right now?
I feel the same way that I did going into this. Look, my wife is bi, and that was something that when we had first started dating, getting used to it and then understanding more was new to me. Mm-hmm. I had friends in the past who are gay, and it was just like, you know, you're just friends with them. But then when your wife, your significant other is, it's like, oh, you start to learn things. You get some extra perspective, right?
Right.
But when you go into a show like Utena, which has famously been known for its gay relationships, and then like taking this, like the recordings with you and throughout the whole podcast, we discuss like the manga author's views versus like Ikuhara's views, and how like the film is just completely lets go of all of that and just goes very strongly gay without like any fucks to give.
Yeah.
I would say... I feel fairly gay for those characters. That's not the right way to say it.
But no, I get it.
I am so happy that Utena and Anthy finally get what they want. And I knew they always had a vision of like wanting to make out on a moving vehicle. I just never knew it was going to be a motorcycle, which was built from the body of Utena. But no, like right. I think like emotionally. I think the series did a good job at the topic of it, but the movie just like really went there. The dancing scene, there's just so much good stuff there.
Yeah. Absolutely. It really it's really gay in the best ways possible. And I, you know, it's kind of impressive looking back on it that this, you know, came out when it did back in 1997, and all of the things that it did and all of the things that it was saying and back in those days. I mean, in Japan, it's not very widely encouraged or anything like that. So seeing even today, so back then, it seems like, wow, that's very impressive, you know, and it's not for the sake of playing into a fantasy, you know. There's a lot of people that are like, oh man, lesbians, but what if like they weren't with me? But it, you know, it's just kind of like that budding relationship and like learning things about themselves and each other, because like, I mean, they're not, it's, I would not say that they're outright, you know, lesbian and completely gay, because like they both have a thing for Akio. It's wrong for both of them, but somehow it's worse for another one of them. So it's like, I don't know, it's just exploring that and like adolescence and figuring out who you are and discovering those things about yourself. It's wonderfully impressive, especially considering when it came from. We have another serious one that we could debate on. This one from Kavakadal, who asks, is Utena the series feminist? Now, we are two white dudes, so I do want to make sure that people know that, that there, if you want to really learn about feminism and things, there are quite a lot of really great women writers out there who have a lot more firsthand experience on what defines feminist and feminism, what it means to them. So I just want to come out and say that. But what are your thoughts on the series being pro-feminist or representing feminism?
Well, previewing that question and listening to you talk, I did some quick Google searches on
what is feminism.
Help well, no, me. The thing is so my wife tells me I'm a feminist. Okay, and cool. It's not a word that I grew up with closely within like my upbringing because of my, I'll just say my parents raising me, where like equality was pretty much a standard. Mm-hmm. And so that being said, if you look into some just basics of feminist, like the word feminist and feminism and equality of sexes and belief in full social, economic and political equality for women, mm-hmm. The first thing that comes to my mind with that question is I am thinking of a country of origin of where this is made, which is Japan. And right. I have not lived in Japan. I have visited that country twice as a tourist. So that's not enough to make full views. But mm-hmm. after reading a number of articles over the years, following some people who have lived there, some Japanese YouTubers, the short of it is there's a lot of inequality. In Japan, as far as I understand, that's how it is still today. There is a phrase that I don't really care for, although I still reference it because I think it's interesting, like Christmas cake or Christmas cakey, which is the after you're like 25 years old, if you're a woman and you're still single, like, are you worthless after that? Like, there are some like concepts that have been rooted in history. I don't know how much that gets said nowadays, but like, there's things that like that joke came up recently, in a very well done, critical, video that was put on by Dogen, through YouTube. There's a lot of educational stuff. He was doing a critical video of the treatment of foreigners, foreign nationals and tourists and other people entering the country and et cetera. And also did a video, all of this ties into the same time frame of stuff, where words that are said that mean something else, and Christmas cake was brought up. So the delivery of the line was amazing, but it's like a strong reminder of where Japan is still, mm-hmm. and some of the expectations of women. I don't really know much about Ikuhara, but understanding some of the background of Ikuhara and some of the creators of this series, I would say that in a way, yes, it is a feminist work. I think it would just be a strong disservice to say no. That being said, I think it holds back in this series. I think it's obvious that it holds back because, I mean, at the end of the day, anime is a production material that is made to make money.
Right.
And I don't think they are able to do as much as they wanted. But then it completely hits a home run for the film. And I think that's even a stronger example of feminist work. I'm not sure if I could give too much more thought into it than that, but hopefully that helps to explain my answer there.
Yeah, very well thought out. Definitely very impressed with you, Jared. Well done. I will also take the stance that I think that it is, and that, granted, there's only so much you can do with a primetime show in 1997 that's only 39 episodes, that is, again, a product made to sell and make money, but also definitely has things it wants to say, and that I think that it does well enough to establish its themes and its values towards women and wanting to strive for equality, especially showing the struggle of that in a world run by men and the patriarchy. Because granted, other female characters in this series, I want to bring up, I do love Juri. And I just thinking about the student council who is run underneath Ankyo. The only woman on that student council is Juri, but she's very like masculine coded. She wears men's clothes. She has a thing for a feminine woman. So she's, you know, very much interested in that sort of, I guess, angle of sexuality. But, you know, it's a woman, but we're cutting it close to making it a dude. But we decided to, you know, jury's going to be a woman here, that the school is kind of run by them, and they are the obstacles in the way of Utena and Anthy. And, you know, it's their struggles against this system that clearly is built to contain them and use and abuse them for their own wants and needs, and them overcoming that. So I don't think it sets out to explain like current political climate in Japan and like all of its societal ills towards women being treated as second class citizens. I think that it does a lot to show like this is the stance we would take on those things, and that it is harder for a woman to get by than it is for a man, simply because they aren't the ones in charge, and they have quite a few battles to make it through and to prove their worth, more so than what is just assumed and given to a man. So I would say that it's definitely a feminist work, and it might have its flaws and its slip-ups here and there, because, again, it was directed, you know, by a man. But there were, you know, plenty of other people that weren't men, behind the scenes, specifically like the manga is written by a woman. There's a lot of people on the staff that weren't, a man as well. But it comes, like, its heart is in the right place, and it says a lot of things that I think are important towards that cause. Is that okay? Is that an okay answer?
Yeah. I think the only thing that, like, I can think of too, would be on this is that, this show handles these themes and some of these topics much more involved than a lot of anime I have seen, where there's a lot of, let's say, girl love. A lot of it does come off as fan service.
Right.
Sometimes it's serious, more slice of life, and you care more for the characters, but it still doesn't ever breach the surface of, like, it doesn't go beyond the surface. It just, this show, like, does certain things so much differently than other anime that I think it's why it puts it, like, way above these other series. You know, I've seen a lot of anime in the days past that, like, they never really go too far. It's always like, oh, first kiss. Okay, guess what? That first kiss happened with Anthy and Utena in the movie in, like, the first 15 minutes. And it was epic. And also, like I said, it's built off of everything you know in the show. And I think it, like, really hits it home. Like, their outfits changed or their hair changed or something in midair. It was all just so powerful. So,
yeah. Absolutely. Moving on to, I guess, I mean, depends on how in-depth you want to get. Mew Universe asked a few questions here, and I'm just going to give them all at once because I think they all kind of tie into each other. But more generally, Jared, what do you think of Anthy? Or more specifically, what do you think of Anthy's actions? And to the end of that, why do you think Anthy stabbed Utena towards the end of the series?
I can kind of summarize this to a pretty singular personal belief that that Anthy was always the same character throughout the whole anime, and that she had not changed much at all. That she had shown some revelation of character behind the mask, behind the facade. But overall, I think all the way up through the ending, that the second to last episode, and she stabs Utena at the end. I think all of that was pretty much indicative of either the control of Akio or the cyclical nature of what she's been through, that things are not going to change, that she was always working against Utena to some degree, that she's really just like this strange object or an item that's being used between the student council and as the Rose Bride, as some strange like promise to revolutionize the world. The only thing that's standing out to me in this, though, is something that we haven't talked about too much, which is like Anthy, I believe it was Anthy, right, trying to jump off the top of the building.
Yes.
Okay. I that's like an escalation of character that is very much different from everything you've seen in most of the show. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to remember why she did that. It's kind of sad I can't remember it, because everything else feels like she is literally just the same old character.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of the night before the final duel. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to recall all of the details that sort of led up to it. She did learn that Utena is with Akio now, and that they have a history and a sexual history and all of these things. It's kind of the culmination of everything that's happened so far. And there's, you know, I think we talked about reasons why that would have, mm-hmm. you know, happened and things like that. But yeah, it's definitely a big escalation of character that I think there's very few times that Anthy reveals what's really on her mind and on her heart. And that's definitely one of them. Another one being when towards the end of the Black Rose arc, we, of course, at the end, we learn that Anthy has been behind Mamiya, this strange character who's going to be the new Rose Bride. She's been playing two roles, herself and Mamiya, and she's becoming more and more tired as time goes by from all of this, where she falls asleep, the first time we've ever seen her asleep in the series, at the same table where Utena is, and Utena didn't do it, but she wakes up to notice that Anthy is holding her hand, which is definitely a moment of vulnerability and kind of showing her true feelings, that she feels a connection to Utena and feels comfortable enough to be in this vulnerable situation with her. That I think that, you know, obviously there's a lot of things going on with Anthy and her background. She's been around for a long time. She's been the on the receiving end of a lot of different kinds of abuse from a lot of different people. And, you know, there's generally kind of a pattern that people who are abused can become abusers themselves to others, you know, being it a learned mm-hmm. behavior or a defense mechanism to having, you know, if they're the abuser, they can't be abused. So mm-hmm. a lot of her actions throughout the series, especially like her stabbing of Utena, is kind of a mix of that and also perhaps a showing of that even though she is a woman, she is still a tool of the patriarchy, and that in Akio not needing Utena anymore, she'll take the sword and stab her and, you know, be rid of her because that is what the man wants, as well as kind of a mix of the devil you know is better than the one you don't. She doesn't know what will happen if Utena overtakes Akio, dethrones him, and changes the world, what that might mean for her. So she's made it by well enough with Akio, despite, you know, being willing to commit suicide, that she mm-hmm. would rather kill Utena out of fear of change and what that could mean, to stick with the status quo and just dealing with it and hoping that things get better some other time, but I don't have to do the work now.
Yeah, there's something, one of the notes I had taken somewhere in these episodes was that Utena had, even after everything, had still felt bad for Anthy, realizing mm-hmm. what Anthy represents and who she really is. And that's like a real testament to, I guess, like the love or the strength between Utena and Anthy. And that Utena could actually move past that. Like, she was literally stabbed and kind of moved past it. She's literally crawling over to that coffin, right? She's mm-hmm. the only one who's been able to open that door and try to gain that power to revolutionize the world, where it didn't really happen the way that Akio or others had thought it would, but it gave Anthy that ability to kind of like be able to walk away. So I think just to answer the question, though, of like, why do I think that Anthy stabbed Utena? I just think she did it because I feel like she was always sort of under Akio's control, or always kind of went with it. And I will relate it to that scene sort of in the film where, I mean, he was drugging her, and then it's like implied that he's sleeping with her mm-hmm. and she wasn't asleep, but she still just went with it. But the, you know, how long did that go on for? And that video showed like a different outcome that time. Whereas like in this, we got the same old Anthy, who is still being controlled by Akio, and she did, I'm just going to say, maybe what was his intention of stopping her. There was a quick moment before all of that that she was basically shown vulnerable on the ground or on the steps, and she was reverted back to her old, the witch tail clothing, like the red dress.
Yep.
Like, that's just like stripping everything else away from her and being like, well, here she is, just the same old Anthy. Like, this is even like down to like her bare self. This is like a character that's still in my control. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of like what happened there. And I think it's kind of what makes that ending of the series a twist, right? You don't expect that to happen. So, yeah, that's a tough question to answer, kind of, in a way. Like, overall, right. I like Anthy's character as, like, a throughput of the entire show. Mm-hmm. But I can't say that I, like her character. I always was definitely cautious with the character, and it was always sketched out by her reactions to things. I never trusted her, ever, even up through the ending. And then in the film, I was hesitant, but then I kind of could see that it was a different type of Anthy to some level. And I'm like, I think I trust you now. So,
okay. If you went back and watched it and, you know, the TV series with what you know, granted, I mean, it's fun to be like, ooh, what kind of horrible things is she plotting and putting together here for her own reasons or for Akio's reasons, but do you think that towards the end you would see her as more sympathetic and not so much just a constant threat, but, you know, obviously she's still gonna stab her, but, like, you know, everything else, the underlying feelings that she has?
Maybe if I watched the show again, I would have some different feelings, but just thinking back to all of the moments of, like, of her, and I don't think I would change much on my opinion on her.
Okay.
It would really take certain things, like reading through my notes, like ever since the beginning of the second arc, it's more implied of like what she's capable of, and I just don't know if I, after tying it all together and rereading through my notes, I don't think it would change much. I don't really care for Anthy as much in the series as I did in the film. I think that the film had a different goal in mind.
Yeah.
So
we've been doing a lot of this whole, you know, conversation here, but Morgan asked, what about the series do you reevaluate looking back from the end? I mean, we talked about what we wanted from it that we didn't get and what we did like. Is there anything else, like, from your initial beginning of the watching that you had changed your mind about at the end or afterwards?
I think we've covered a good amount of what we've kind of, like, to answer that question in this. I think if I had to change what I reevaluated, I wish I've seen that film earlier, which would imply that I wish I've seen that series earlier in my life, because it would have probably stuck with me even more heavily than it is now throughout the years.
That's very fair. I mean, I didn't see it until I was, now I got to do math. 25? Is that right? Yeah, something like that. I definitely wish I would have seen it earlier. Wish I would have seen it at a more formative time. Like, I watched Evangelion when I was 14, so I was Shinji's age. And I think that helps it stick with me. I know other people that have seen it when they're older, and it still does. But, like, I don't know. It's got a special place in my heart because of when I saw it.
Right.
And then this is a big one, big philosophical one from Astronaut, who asked, what do you think is one thing from Utena to apply to life and your relationships to people?
Oh, that's tough.
I have an answer that I could throw out there if you want time to think
about it. Yeah, if you
want to
give that answer, because I don't have like a well-rounded answer yet.
There is a part, I think it's at the end of the first arc, or is it later, where I think it's after her loss to Toga, where she kind of starts questioning everything, and we learn that, like, this entire time, like, you know, Anthy has always told the truth, that she is the, she's owned by the person who wins her in the duel, and she does anything to appease them. And after she wins her, she's like, oh, you didn't ever wanted to do this. Like, this is who you are. And, like, you can't be told by people what to do, blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, she's telling her what she wants and what she feels. And after that, she's like, oh no, I was doing the same thing. And I was doing it out of my own desire to be the knight in shining armor, the prince, and to save somebody and to be held on a pedestal as like a great hero. And that I shouldn't be telling her what to do. I should just, you know, be offering my services as a friend and, you know, to help and not to command and guide. And I think something that I take away from that is that to do less assuming about people and their thoughts, because I'm basing that off of my own experiences and point of view and perspective, and they might be coming at it from something else, and there might be something that in their lives that is shaping this that gives them a different outlook on things, and that I shouldn't make those assumptions and imprint my own desires and philosophy to them, and to listen more than to tell.
My answer is going to be a bit more generic, but also also part of my phrasing that I've used since I used to do some volunteer work with a site. I picked it up from there and I've ran with it for years now, which is like anime is real life. Real life is anime. It's a joke, but even so, all the good anime series, the bad anime series, everything in between, it's all built from people, like human beings made these shows. You know, again, a lot of it's made to make money. A lot of it's made to sell merch, but there are lessons to learn. Some anime don't have much to learn, but I think this series has a lot to take away from it. I think that perspective of others and what they're going through is important. You don't really, you know, we learn as a viewer what some of these characters have been through, but other characters don't know what maybe they were through. It's a form of dramatic irony that you know what the characters have been through, but they don't all know what each other has been through. And it's what drives some of the drama in a lot of shows. So kind of riding on a little bit what you said, and then tying it into that this stuff is made by real people. I think that this series in particular, and going back into like, is this a feminist work? I think this is worth seeing to solidify relationships. And I think that like the topic of forgiveness is really strong. Especially with Utena and Anthony near the end, because I'm tying it into a lot of the questions we were asked. But that it can be good to evaluate where you're at with somebody else and to see what may be worth continuing on with. And in the relation to this series, I'm talking about obviously Utena crawling across the ground to still save Anthy. You can say that she was able to move past Akio's control of her too. Man, I know it's not like really the greatest answer, but I just think that you just have to think that after everything that we had seen from the director's commentary, and we know of like some of the background of the show, that it's representative of a view, and that this is one of those rare series that I feel like it kind of pays off, and that you can really see that there is some goal or essence of a goal that was achieved. So, yeah. That's kind of where I'm going with it, that like, and you can relate that to your own life too, that taking an extra moment or a pause to view other people could be worth it, and instead of just skimming by. So
exactly. I wholeheartedly agree. Jared, I think Randy, we're gonna call it here. I want to thank all of the listeners for listening and joining us on this journey. Jared, I also want to say that it was so fun to sit down and show this show to you and to talk with you about it. You've been absolutely lovely. It's been so great to podcast with you again after so long, and you are a stand-up dude.
I appreciate everything you're saying. No, I appreciate you're right, Randy.
Way to go.
We've had like a good time over in the past of a lot of our recordings, and when you were bringing this up to me for recording like a podcast about Utena, I'm like, oh, I've never really seen that show. I saw that first episode. It was okay. This sounds good. And we went through it, and the time commitment and scheduling things, putting together our outlines and the editing involved is a lot, and it's very much appreciated. And I know that there will be some group of people out there who appreciate it. So if anything, let's give that clap. to definitely stand out your hard work and commitment to this, because without it, we wouldn't have done this. So,
well, thank you. I mean, it's all worth it. You know, I get to have an excuse to hang out and chat with somebody that I don't get the chance to very often. And even when the show is done, I would still like to talk with you often, you know, even if we're not recording it, you know, text message, if we can jump in a phone call and chit chat, it's great. And
yeah, we've done that once in a while here and there, but not enough.
Yeah.
Life goes on and things happen, but still.
Mm-hmm. We'll have to schedule it like we have these podcasts. That way we can force ourselves to do it. I guess I should also thank any of our sponsors for ads and stuff that we've had on here. Jared, would you like to tell people where they can find you as you go on through life, or where they can find the things that you do?
Yeah, mostly you can find me through Hot Anime Vlogger. That's where like all of my stuff is now, through Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. I guess I'm on Snapchat. I don't know. Those things. TikTok, there's a few things. Yeah, you can sometimes find me appearing in my wife's TikTok called 2D's Tree Trunk, or also known as Rose from the Grave. She's doing a lot better with that. I show up in those if you want to see some silly stuff. But, you know, that's pretty much where I've been going for now. How about you, Randy?
You can find me at Saber_Breaker under most things. You can also find another podcast that I do called We Got a Podcast, Dragon Ball from A to Z, that I do with one of my good friends, Doug. We do it every other week. We actually just had our 1-year anniversary this month.
Congratulations. That's great.
Yeah, thanks. It's been
1 year.
Aw, yeah. And many, many more to come. But definitely check that out. I'd like to say that we're not like the usual, like, I don't know, screeching Dragon Ball fans. Things have changed in the last few years. There's a lot of good people out in that fandom.
I can say from what I've listened to for your podcast, I think you have your pacing and you have the episodes down really well. I think it shows too. I'm assuming you do outlines for that show too. And
yes.
And when I've listened, I get this feeling that it moves along well and it's entertaining. So
thank you. I try to do that because, you know, it's you got to moderate it as you go. So you got to think about what you're doing, what you're saying, but also like keep the conversation going and thinking about the listener and what they want to be hearing. It's a lot of multitasking brain work. So thank you. It's good times. You'll have a fun time if you listen to it. I know that the show is over here, but you know, tell your friends about it, have them subscribe and listen to it. There's not a lot of Utena stuff out there, but since we're now in its 25th anniversary, people might be looking for it. And if you subscribe and, you know, post reviews, it definitely bumps us up on that search list. So that way people can find it a lot easier. It would be very great to see you do that. And I guess one last time, thank you for joining us on this journey. I don't think that we have anything else for this show, but if we come up with anything and we want to revisit something, we'll post it here in the same feed. So, you know, stay subscribed if you liked it, because there might be something in the future. I'm not making any promises. I don't even have anything planned, but who knows? The world is a crazy place. So enjoy that. And again, thank you so much. And we hope to see from you, hear from you something again in the future. But take care and be good to each other.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Theme song Zettai Unmei Moko Shiroku, provided by Astrophysics. You can find their music on Bandcamp and YouTube, or follow them on Twitter at AstroSynth.